Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us here. This is Red Ice TV. My name is Henrik. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. You can catch the video version on our websites and our YouTube channel. And of course, if you just want to catch the radio version, that's fine too. We have RSS feeds. You can download them or stream them from our radio archives on our websites. So today we're actually going to spend some time talking about the recent London Bridge attackers, the consequent stabbings at the market. And of course, this comes in the wake of two, just very, very recently, other attacks in England. Manchester before this, and then previously was another one on the London Bridge, of course. I think I called it the singularity, right? The terror singularity. At some point, we're going to reach this zenith point where it's just basically one after another after another. We're not going to get a pause in between. We're not going to get a break. This is just going to turn into, I don't know if you guys saw the Brazil movie, you know, the bombs goes off in the background and people just sitting around like ignoring it, like eating their dinner and just like laughing. And it seems so absurd. But our guest who's here to talk about this, it's a very serious topic, but it's so bizarre that this is reality now. And this is, many people are not really reacting to this. They don't talk about solutions. Well, what do we do about this? People are being murdered. What do we do? So we have back on the show Mark Collette to actually help us deconstruct some of this and just talk generally about the situation in Britain. So welcome back, Mark. Thanks for coming on again.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here again. Thank you for having me.
You bet. So how would you go about deconstructing this most recent attack? I mean, it's so much, of course, we can say about the details of the attack. But I think what people should know is that it seems that this is just normal life now in the UK. And we have a mayor, of course, that has talked about the fact that this is what we need to adapt to. And this is just how life is going to be in a big city. What do you say to that?
Well, that's the first. I'm really pleased you brought that up, first of all, because that's something that's extremely important. The way the establishment, the liberal media, the mainstream media, the government, the politicians, they are trying to normalize this. I mean, Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, he has claimed that terror attacks like this are just part and parcel of living in a major city. And really, what he means by that is they're part and parcel of multiculturalism. They're something that we need to accept because we're having this multicultural experiment pushed upon us. Because really, they're not just part and parcel of a major city. Because you don't have Islamic terror attacks in Tokyo because there aren't any Muslims. But you do have Islamic terror attacks in London, in Manchester, in Berlin. You have them all over France, in Paris, because there's a high concentration of Muslims. And the fact of the matter is, the problem, the underlying problem, what's built this terrorist menace is mass immigration and multiculturalism, because neither mass immigration or multiculturalism have benefited either the British people or Europeans in general. In fact, mass immigration and multiculturalism are destroying the fabric of our society, and they pose a huge existential crisis to the people who are the rightful owners of the Western world, the Europeans.
Yes, that is correct. So let's actually take a look at just one report, just to kind of open this up for us a little bit, as we're going to, you know, deconstruct what is really happening here, and actually talk about some solutions to the problem, because of course we don't hear that from the politicians. I think that they have a very different idea of how they're seeking to solve this. Let's take a look at a report here first, and then we can come back and kind of talk about this a little bit.
At 8 minutes past 10 last night, we began to receive reports that a vehicle had struck pedestrians on London Bridge. The vehicle continued to drive then from London Bridge to Borough Market. The suspects left the vehicle, attempting to stab a number of people, including an on-duty British Transport police officer who was responding to the incident, and he received serious injuries, fortunately not life-threatening. Armed response officers then responded very quickly and bravely and confronted the three male suspects who were shot and killed in Borough Market within 8 minutes of the first call.
People, you know, running, screaming, and then, the police sirens came in.
And then they started to tell us to evacuate.
And then they told everyone to evacuate. So as we looked out, you know, we were on the third floor. As we looked out our window, you know, we're seeing people running and evacuating.
I picked up some passengers. There was two passengers. Apparently, they came out of the Black and Blue restaurant, and they described how they described to me was they were preventing the guys from getting into the restaurant. She managed to hold the door for a few seconds, but then they were, I think they're overpowered. So they managed to escape from the rear door.
I'm appalled and furious that these cowardly terrorists would deliberately target innocent Londoners and bystanders enjoying their Saturday night. There can be no justification for the acts of these terrorists, and I'm quite clear that we will never let them win, nor will we allow them to cower our city or London.
Sure. Sure, man. We'll talk about this in a little bit.
That seven members of the public have died. In the early hours of this morning, I visited one of the hospitals where the injured are being treated. There I heard truly remarkable stories of extraordinarily brave actions by officers on and off duty who were first on the scene.
This is, as we all know, the third terrorist attack Britain has experienced in the last 3 months. We cannot and must not pretend that things can continue as they are. The whole of our country needs to come together to take on this extremism, and we need to live our lives not in a series of separated, segregated communities, but as one truly united kingdom.
All right, so let's deconstruct this a little bit of some of the responses that we've seen here. But of course, just 5 minutes ago at the time of this recording, we have two of the attackers named by the police. It is Karoum Butt, appropriately, 27, living in East London for a number of years. And then there's also Rahid Redanu, almost, I guess, like French Algerian, maybe, or something. I don't know. 30. Doesn't say any more details about him there in this regard. But is this a surprise to you, Mark? I mean, we kind of knew this, didn't we?
It's not a surprise to me at all. But I'd really like to point out at this juncture, the liberals, the left, they're sort of in some ways rejoicing over this because they're saying this isn't a problem with immigration. It's not a problem with immigration because all these people were born here in Britain. And that's an interesting point because the politicians and the establishment and the media as well have repeatedly told us that the goal of a multicultural society is integration and that we really have nothing to fear from immigration because these people will integrate when they have their children, when the second and third generation immigrants, these people will acclimatize to life in Britain. They will learn our language. They will go to work. They will send their children to our schools. They will adopt our culture and our value. And they'll become just as British or just as English as, you know, King Harold, King of the Saxons. They'll be just the same as us and there'll be no difference.
Right.
But that's been a huge lie. Because the people carrying out these terrorist attacks are often second or third generation immigrants. And when you look at that, you can see what a huge lie integration has been, especially in the case of the Manchester attacker. His parents were refugees from Libya. They came here. We housed them. We clothed them. We fed them. They had a child here. We paid for their child. Their child was brought up here. He was educated here. We paid for his clothes. We paid for the roof above his head. When I say we, I'm talking about the British taxpayer who's overwhelmingly, you know, white. You know, white Europeans paid for that family to come here. We did everything for them. And how did that second generation immigrant repay our kindness, repay our gratitude? He didn't fit in. He didn't acclimatize. In fact, he had just as much, if not more, hatred for the West, after all we've done for him and his family, than the newly arrived refugees. This man had more hatred and more disgust for the nation and the people that have looked after and sheltered his family than we could possibly understand. So this huge lie. I'm not inside his head, but I do believe that these people have a vastly different culture to ours. They have a vastly different way of life. And really, when we have taken, historically, when Britain has taken refugees, for example, when we took in the Huguenots from France, We took in the Huguenots because they were Protestants. They were white Protestants, and we were a leading Protestant country. And they agreed with Britain. They agreed with our system, they agreed with our religion, and they agreed with our way of life. But these people don't. We are taking in people who are classified as refugees, but they aren't really people who have anything in common with us. They aren't the same religion. They don't have the same culture. They don't have the same way of life, and they don't want to fit in. And most crucially, we are at war with countries and peoples who share the same religion and the same culture as those. We've destabilized the Middle East. We have killed countless, we've killed hundreds of thousands of people in the Middle East. And obviously we know why we've done that. We know the people who have benefited from that. And obviously these people harbor huge, huge grudges against us. And we have built a fifth column within our own country. These refugees are literally the Trojan horse for terrorism. And when they get here, and when their children grow up here, their children harbor just as much, if not more, resentment than their parents ever did. And this is a growing problem. And I will also say that it is completely disingenuous when the left say they're not immigrants just because they've been born here. These people are not native to our lands. They do not have any love or any compassion for our people. And this can be seen in the acts they commit. And it just goes to show that just because you're born in this country doesn't automatically make you British. It doesn't make you part of our community. And they're not part of our community. They are part of their own community. And there hasn't really been any great mixing. They live within their own communities, and their community is highly cohesive, it's highly insular. Often they are brought up in schools that speak their language. They all go to the mosque on a Friday. They stick amongst their own, and they have held on to their culture, which is anti-Western. It's anti-British, and that's why they're doing these things. And multiculturalism, immigration, and this huge lack of integration that we were promised has caused these problems to fester and to develop. And now we're seeing the real fruits of that. And the worrying thing, the really worrying thing about this for everyone here, well, for really for white Europeans, is at the moment, these people, they are a minority. And if these atrocities are happening when they're a minority, what will be happening when they're a majority? And the fact of the matter is, in English primary schools, 33% of children are non-white or of non-white origin. So that means in 15 years, a minimum of a third of people in England will be non-white, and a huge proportion of them will be Muslim. So you've essentially got a third, in 15 years' time, a third of 20-year-olds will be of non-white, non-British origin. And that's not even counting the ones that will have come in since then. Mm. We have literally built a hostile army within our own borders. And if it's bad now, what's it going to be like in 15 years? What's it going to be like in 20 years? What's the primary school makeup going to be like in 15 or 20 years? Will it be 50% non-white, 60% non-white? And I've seen this with my own eyes. A year or so ago, I went to the National Space Center in Leicester for a day out. And there was entire primary school classes without a single white face. That is demographic change on an unprecedented level. That is white genocide. And with it comes this terrorism. And the mayor of London, if you translate what he said, that terrorism is part and parcel, well, it's part and parcel of multiculturalism, not of living in a big city, but part and parcel of this multicultural tinderbox that people like him and the ones who pull his strings have built.
Yeah, that's right. They have created this, and they need to start taking responsibility for this, not just pretend that it's somehow... I mean, I don't know. The reasons why they have given this goes back and forth, or the reasons, I guess, for how they would like to see a multicultural society be a successful one that keeps changing. At some stage, they were talking about the fact that everyone needs to integrate, right? We all need to basically not really become a multicultural society, but a monocultural society, where basically everyone merges into each other, start mixing both literally and also, you know, the cultures and everything. So that out of that, you know, kind of mess, if you will, there will come some new beautiful thing, right? That's one pipe dream which they've had. But then after a certain stage, they also stopped advocating for that, it seems like. And they said, you know what, we don't want to impose who we are upon these people. It's almost like it was racist for us to say, you need to integrate into our system and learn our language. So an automatic outcome of this, of course, has been that this creates literally multiple different cultures within one territory. And as you say, because of that, we can now see that these communities and these different people and races and religions, they become very insular. They become hostile to each other, and then they, you know, want to act out like we see now. But do you think that the solution then would have been okay? It would have been, from the point of view of terrorism, it would be better if it was some kind of monoculture, or would it be better if you know, they were kept separate? Because at that stage, I'm just talking from the point of view of, we know what we want, but I'm talking from the point of view of politicians. What do they want here, right? What's the solution to this? Would it be better, do you think, to have a monoculture from their point of view, without everyone blending together?
Well, first, I just want to talk about something you mentioned there about the insular nature of their communities, because this is really important. And it's important for listeners who potentially don't live in Britain to understand what's happening here. What tends to happen is immigrants come here, and as you've seen, they call themselves refugees. But when you see these boatloads of people, they are overwhelmingly young, able-bodied men of fighting age. They are not little old women and little old men and children. They're not women with children. They are men of fighting age. And they're here not because they're refugees, but because they are economic migrants. They are coming here to abuse our benefit system. And I can come back to this later, but the British government have recently changed the benefit system and the way it works in Britain to specifically benefit Muslims. And I produced a video on this a couple of weeks back. It's been watched on a number of channels about 50,000 times now, but I can go into this. But when these men come here, they set up a base. They start working, they start claiming benefits, they get a house. Then they return to their country of origin. And on returning to their country of origin, they then engage in an arranged marriage or meet a woman. And once they've married her, they bring her back to the UK. Now, this woman, she doesn't go out and get a job. She stays in the home, and she is there to breed and to do housework for the male. She's there to support him. But crucially, because she isn't going out of the house, and because she's come from her native land and she's not going out, she's not working or doing any form of business in the outside world, she only deals with her husband, duties in the home, and she goes to the mosque. These women overwhelmingly speak a foreign language as their first language. And because of that, they're the ones bringing up the children. They're primarily with the children in the home. So this second generation of immigrants, they are primarily speaking other languages as their first language. They're not speaking English as a first language. So we're talking about a lack of integration. Well, how can you integrate when you don't even speak English? You don't even speak the native language as your primary language. So you've got all these kids, they're going to school. Well, in these schools, the schools don't speak English as a primary language. You can go to schools in Bradford, Birmingham, Leicester, London, and English isn't the primary language. So you've got this huge barrier, and they create their own communities. And it's like oil and water. You can try and make them mix, but eventually they will separate. And to a degree, if there was anything I admire these people for, it is for the fact they want to hold on to their culture. They want to hold on to their culture, their tradition, their heritage, their language.
I agree.
Because I want to hold on to mine.
That's right.
But the point is, I don't want them here, because there is a place for their culture, but it's not in Bradford. It's not in Leicester. It's not in London. It's not in Birmingham. It's in Saudi Arabia. It's in Iraq. It's in Iran. It's in Pakistan or Bangladesh. There, I believe there's about 40 Muslim countries or predominantly Muslim countries in the world. Those people can go to those predominantly Muslim countries where they speak the native tongue and they can carry out their way of life, their religion. They can embrace their own culture. They can embrace their own heritage and they can embrace their traditions there. This is not their land. But that's how they come here. That is how they bring their wives here. And that is how they build their own cultural enclaves. And obviously, because they build these cultural enclaves, they are not mixing with the native people. And because they're not mixing with the native people, and because they're not even speaking English to a large degree, this fosters terrorism. This fosters these terrorist training grounds, these mosques which push this, you know, vile ideology of anti-Western hatred.
Yeah.
And we don't even know what's going on in there because we don't mix with them. And I was talking earlier about the incentives for these people to come here. Well, if you want to go on benefits in Britain, if you're working a full-time job in Britain and you quit your job because you don't want to work anymore, you just want to go and sit at home and you want to have children, and you want to look after your children and you want an easy ride. Well, the government recently changed the benefit system, and they changed the benefit system to state that if you quit your job and you don't, if you quit your job, so you're not made redundant, but you've quit, you just don't like it, so you walk out, you cannot claim job seekers allowance for up to 26 weeks. So that means for up to half a year, you can't claim benefits. And that's to incentivize British people to stay in full-time employment. Now, this does not apply if you're a Muslim. If you're a Muslim and you walk into the workplace and you say, I don't really want this job, you can walk out and just claim, well, unfortunately, there was a woman in the office or there was a woman on the factory floor. And I can't work alongside her because that offends me, that I've got a religious objection to that. And because you've walked out based on a religious objection, you can claim benefits straight away. Straight away, you can be on job seekers allowance. And that means that Muslims in Britain are overwhelmingly on benefits. 50%, and this is from the Daily Telegraph. These are real figures. You can look them up on my YouTube channel. I've linked to all the documents. I've done a full video on this, exposing this. 50% of Muslim men are on state benefits. And 75% of Muslim women are on state benefits. Mm. So essentially, these people are being paid by the British taxpayer to come here, to start families, and to breed. And that is the other huge component of what we're talking about. It's not just mass immigration, it is their birth rate. Their birth rate is rapidly it has outstripped ours rapidly. We have a growing population, yet the white birth rate is falling. These people are growing in number. They are hugely insular. They have a cohesive and anti-Western culture. And the fruits of all this can be seen over the last 3 months where you're seeing these terrorist atrocities. And the British government claim that there are 23,000 Muslim extremists who are in some way linked to these terrorist circles or on terrorist watch lists in Britain. Now, let's put this into perspective. These people are a minority, yet there are 23,000 of them
right
on these watch lists. Now, there's only 80,000 British troops in the armed forces. So you're pushing a third of the number that's in the British armed forces who are here on terror watch lists. That isn't just a small problem. That is essentially almost an invading army.
Yeah.
In both ideology and in number.
Yeah. Yep. And do you think that the politicians know what they're doing? Is there anyone along the line here who's like, let's manufacture this, let's create this? Because, you know, you and me were talking a little bit before the show, and although I'm probably as tired as you are on everyone who just immediately jumps on a false flag on this, but obviously there have been issues like Operation Gladio running in Europe in the past. There are, you know, some of these things going on. Where I would maybe come into the, where I would maybe begin to agree with some of this would be, well, is there someone who's seeking to create this? Because as we said, when Theresa May talks about, oh, well, we can't pretend that this is going to go on as usual, she's not talking about deporting these people or ending multiculturalism. She's actually talking about going after, you know, extremism. And the question is, they seem more concerned to go after people who are critical of immigration than to do something about radical Islam itself. Is that the solution that they're going to come with after this?
It certainly is. And it's an important thing you say about the false flags. Now, these people have manufactured terrorism, but they haven't manufactured it in the sense of a false flag. They've manufactured it by bringing these people here. Now, I did a tweet the other day. You might want to look it up because I see you've been putting up infographics during this broadcast. And I did one the other day where leading Labour members of the Labour Party have admitted that they have flooded this country with immigrants and built a multicultural society for political purposes. And one of the reasons they actually stated for doing this was so that they could, quote unquote, rub the noses of the right wing into diversity. So basically, they did this to spite the British people. They did this to spite people like myself or anyone who wants to live in a homogenous, white, cohesive society. That's how evil these people are. But they didn't do it in the sense of, when I say they didn't manufacture this, they didn't do it in the sense of a false flag. You see, these terrorist attacks, the government doesn't want this. The government doesn't want terrorism. They want multiculturalism, but they don't want terrorism, because these terror attacks shine a light on the fact that multiculturalism and immigration doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It shines a light on the fact that we're not all going to multi-faith ceremonies and dancing round, holding hands, singing Kumbaya together. It shows that their experiment has failed, and it has failed in the most dramatic and explosive way possible. And it undermines everything that they have stood for and that they have tried to build. And it also strengthens our position. It shows that everything we have said hasn't just been scaremongering. It hasn't been hate. It hasn't been lies. And these are the accusations they have repeatedly thrown at people like myself, people like you, and many others out there who have, you know, railed against this madness. It's shown that we're correct. And this is the last thing they want, because they don't want their multicultural dream to fail. But it isn't a dream. It's not produced a utopia.
No.
It's a nightmare. But the very worrying thing about this is, when you listen to Theresa May's full speech, she's saying, well, you know, there is a problem here. But she isn't saying the problem's multiculturalism. She's not saying the problem's mass immigration. She isn't even saying the problem's Muslims. She is saying, in very woolly terms, that the problem is quote-unquote extremism, as if extremism is some abstract. And her way of dealing with that is, she has repeatedly said, both in the clip you're playing there and in the Conservative Party manifesto, that she wants to clamp down on freedom of speech.
That's right.
That she wants to bring in new laws to curtail, essentially, not terrorists, not Muslim extremism, not immigration, not multiculturalism. She wants to bring in new laws to stop people criticizing Islam. She wants to bring in laws to censor the internet. Now, this is the woman who brought in the Snoopers Charter, which allows all internet providers, that allows all mobile phone providers to keep customer data for a year after it has been sent or downloaded, so that the government can look at what people are doing. So if you send your mum a text message, you say, "Hi mum, going to be home late for tea tonight because I got stuck in traffic." Well, that's on record for a year. She's also trying to bring in new anti-Semitism laws, which will make it illegal to criticize the state of Israel. It will make it illegal to question any facet of a certain historical occurrence. And finally, she is trying to bring in new laws which will allow her to censor and control the internet. And she proudly states she wants Britain to be a leading, or the leading power, or the leading country in data control and data surveillance.
Yeah.
And it is very clear to see what she's doing. She is not actually going to clamp down on any Muslim extremists. She is not going to try and unravel the multicultural society. And she certainly isn't going to curtail immigration. She is going to clamp down on people like you and I, and she will take away our freedom of speech. In fact, Muslim terrorism will continue in Britain. That is a fact. What won't continue under Theresa May is us being allowed to criticize these killers and criticize the system that is bringing about this misery and death.
Okay, so there's a couple of different incentives of why they would kind of allow this to continue, because I do believe that it benefits them, because I genuinely believe that if they wanted to stop it, they actually, they more or less could. There is the issue, of course, just to be, you know, balance that picture a little bit, that the police are also way out of their league here. There's just too many people to keep an eye on and keep track of. I saw a tweet just here before we came on about how supposedly, here it is, let me pull this up here, supposedly they did a documentary. It was Channel 4, I think, was doing a documentary, and the London Bridge terrorist supposedly was part of that, but yet they didn't do anything. They didn't stop. I don't know if that's true. This is just one tweet I saw, but I wouldn't be surprised. What I'm saying is that, yes, to a certain extent, they are way over their head. There's just too many people to keep track of. They do have limited resources. They can't just check everything and everybody all the time. It's not possible. But I do think that if they truly wanted to do something about terrorism itself, they could, by starting to controlling the borders, making sure that the people are out there illegally, throw them out, and then start basically, you know, repatriating people. That's really the solution to this. Let's separate. No more bombing. No more killing each other. They have their territory. We have ours. It's really that simple. But I do believe that they want to build a police state. I do believe that they're using this as an excuse to do it. And I also believe that they want to try to create, at the end of this, a kind of a emerged society, as I said, that these extremist factions, like you know, radical Islam on one end and, quote, far-right extremists on the other, unquote, that the normal people, the regular people, will somehow merge, but you know, to make peace here, will somehow merge together and make sure that these extremes kind of fall to the wayside. Because the reactions that many have, Mark, when you listen to this, is one of immediate, let's say, forgiveness or almost denial, of course, but they're like, we're not going to be threatened by these cowards. So it's like, well, guess what? You're the coward for not facing this head on and talking about this issue and what's doing for it, what's happening here. But they seem to be willing to sacrifice their own sons, their own daughters, their own future of their children just to achieve this multicultural utopia that they believe in so much. So what do you think is the convergence point here? Is it the normies in between that's simply going to merge into each other at some point and hope that these two extremes go away? Or what's going to happen here?
Well, I think, number one, they'll never be able to crack down on the Muslims, because the Muslims are not going to rat each other out. They are not materialistic, and that's something to remember. Now, the West and Western powers and Western governments have always believed that you can buy people off, because that works with white people who have lost their spirituality. White people have lost the sense of who they are. They have very little connection to their community, sometimes very little connection to their own family. They're not religious, they're not spiritual, and they don't have really any connection to their soil either. So blood and soil has been long forgotten, as has any form of spirituality. And in its place has come materialism. So whilst they know that to a large degree they can try and buy off white people with benefits, tax breaks, bread and circuses, essentially, that doesn't work for Islam. You can't buy these people off, because these people are working towards a higher power. They come from a very cohesive community. They love their community. They are family orientated. They have a strong sense of tradition, heritage, culture. And of course, they have a huge and an iron, you know, ironclad belief in their religion.
Mm-hmm.
And because of this, they're going to, the government will never get into their communities. And that's why these things happen, because they do have a cohesive community. They speak another language for a fact. So even if white people overheard them talking about potential terrorist plans, we wouldn't even know what they were saying. So they're not, the government aren't going to break these people down. That's a fact.
Mm-hmm.
But the government will have more, far more success in censoring normal people and in making normal people feel bad for voicing any legitimate concerns about immigration, about multiculturalism, through the use of terms like racist, bigot, Islamophobe, and they will get people to bow their heads. But as for the normies, I think the normies are going to split, because since Brexit, since Trump, we've seen a huge polarization in politics. A little while ago, around the time when Tony Blair came to power in 1997 in Britain, there was this belief that everything was headed towards a central ground, towards this middle ground.
Yeah, it was a third way politics. Tony Blair was so successful at merging, you know, the supposed right with the left, right?
Yeah, and it was trying to capture this middle ground.
Yeah.
But since then, you've seen the polarization of politics. You see this here in Britain with Jeremy Corbyn. He's extremely far left. You've seen it in America with Trump. You've seen the rise of the SJW movement. And equally, you've seen the rise of the alt-right. And you're seeing more and more people now who have no interest in the middle ground. And they're either ardent multiculturalists, SJWs, people who believe in these insane sort of liberal values that make no sense. And on the other hand, you see people who are pro-Brexit, pro-Trump, anti-immigration, highly anti-Islam. And I think the normies will essentially go one of two ways. And you will see those who try to stand on the center ground, you'll see the ground beneath their feet literally disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And people will come to us, but equally, there will be a large group of people who sadly, mainly for them, will run towards radicalism, run towards Islam with open arms, saying, we understand you're all peaceful. And essentially, it'll be like watching a crowd of sheep running towards the wolves, saying, please embrace us, Mr. Wolf, because you're going to bring us some wonderful diversity and this new culture that's going to enrich us. And we all know what's going to happen there. Because these people, they can plant all the little candles they want. They can change their Facebook profile pictures. They can proudly proclaim that love will defeat hate. But all these things are meaningless platitudes. They're just nonsense.
Yeah.
They aren't going to bring about an end to any of these problems. And all of these manufactured multi-faith ceremonies, they'll do no good in the end. And these people, unfortunately, will feel the pain of multiculturalism, because ultimately the ones who will come through this are the ones who will learn to discriminate, who will learn to love and embrace their own people and their own cultures, and who will embrace traditionalism and steel themselves against this multicultural nightmare. And unfortunately, as I just said, those who seek to embrace it will be like lambs to the slaughter.
In a way, I'm glad, as you said before, that actually the Islamic community is so strong and cohesive in itself. They, of course, they don't belong in the West. That's the big problem. But I am personally glad that there isn't emerging. I think the greatest tragedy would be of multiculturalism is if all the cultures did merge. I know that that's a, you know, in the short term, a problematic position to take, because it means that these communities will probably end up fighting for resources and territory, and it's going to be a very, very unpeaceful situation, shall we say. But at the end of the day, I'm glad that that's the case, because I don't want to see these distinct cultures be removed and disappear, including Islam. I mean, I frankly, it's fine. They can be in their own countries. They have the territories now. Yes, I know that they've been, you know, fighting for 600-700 years to expand even more than at this point. And yes, at some point, of course, it has to be, stopped in its tracks. It can't just keep pushing into Europe further from the south and stuff like this. But as long as they're contained with what they have now, I don't have a problem with it. I'm not one of these neocon, you know, Zionist globalists that want to go in there and bomb them in their own countries. I think the bombing market, it seems, has been almost also an incentive by the globalists to let these people in. As Steve Saylor said, you know, bomb the world, invite the world, right? So you bomb them, you know, and then you invite them into your countries. Like, of course they're going to have hostility towards you. And they're indoctrinated in this method or system all the time that it's like the West is the enemy and these people are bombing you. I mean, this is a no-brainer, I think, for people like us. But these normies and politicians, they just can't seem to figure it out.
No, well, it really stems from a complete lack of joined up thinking. You can't bomb people. You can't have people see their families, their people, their culture, their communities literally torn apart day in, day out. You see it on the news all the time. They see their homelands razed to the ground. And you can't expect these people to have any love for a country that endorses that. And a large part of our problem is our suicidal foreign policy. And I completely agree with the idea of a diverse tapestry. I believe in true diversity because every culture, every people has their place on the planet. It just isn't here in the West. It's not in Europe. The place for Muslims, for Africans, for Asians, it's not here in Europe. They have their own place and they should have the right to control their own destiny, just as we as Europeans should. And I certainly don't condone any of these wars in the Middle East. I don't condone the bombing of Syria, the bombing of Iraq. I didn't condone the bombing of Libya, because all these Middle Eastern wars do is bolster the position of Israel, destabilize the Middle East, and then ultimately lead to another incredible flood of these so-called refugees who then pour into the West. And when they get here, obviously, they resent us because we're the ones, or they see us as the ones, who have just flattened their homeland and potentially killed members of their community, their friends and their family. And none of this is joined up thinking. In fact, it's all complete madness. And it builds this incredible tinderbox. And you see all these problems, but the problems aren't just limited to the terrorism we're talking about today, because it's not just their hatred for us that's a problem. There is the problem that their culture simply isn't compatible with the West. So you see things like the grooming scandal in Britain. You see things like the sexual assaults in places like Cologne, and their attitudes towards animals, towards women, towards alcohol, towards things that are important to the West. They just don't fit in here. And I do believe they have a place in the world, but that place should never have been within our borders.
Yes, I agree completely. This is the police official, you know, stance on this. Run and hide, and then you can snitch, right? It's like this doesn't work. This is the bottom line, and we have to continue to stress this. And we stress this for the newcomers. And I know that people are it's weird, but they're almost like, and I understand it, but they're jaded, right? They're even tired of talking about this. But we have to continue to point out that it's like there is a reasonable and sensible position to take here, and I think that position is one that actually one of the Breitbart writers did. Let me just show you this here. CNN Money reported on this. Breitbart employees infuriated by colleagues. They were appalled, supposedly, after Katie Mayhew tweeted about the attack. And what was it she said that was the big crime? Well, she said, there would be no deadly terror attacks in the UK if Muslims didn't live there. It's pretty sensible, isn't it? She was fired from Breitbart after this.
Well, I find that shocking because I always thought Breitbart was more on our side of the fence. And really, pardon me, what she said is common sense. As I said at the beginning of this show, you don't see Islamic terrorism in Tokyo because there isn't Muslims there. And the fact is, she is completely correct. And the fact that, sadly, we live in such a politically correct society that when somebody points out the truth, such as that, they're fired, and fired from a supposedly right-wing news agency. you see the problem that we're facing, the problem that normal people face. And that is a huge reason to why we're in this mess, because people are so scared today. They're scared of being called a racist, being called an Islamophobe, and they're scared of the repercussions of that. They're scared of losing their job. They're scared of losing their livelihood. They don't want to become an outcast. And it's almost like you can liken being called a racist to being called a witch in medieval times. Essentially, once that accusation has been leveled at you, you're done for. You're finished. And it's very sad that that young girl has been sacked, and she'll obviously have that on her CV or resume for life now. She's been thrown to the dogs for simply speaking the truth, because no one could argue with what she said. If these Muslims hadn't been here, there wouldn't have been these terror attacks. And again, that goes back to what Theresa May was saying in the speech she played earlier. She claims that really the crux of this, the real problem, is that we haven't had enough multiculturalism yet.
Yeah, we need more of it. That's the solution. Yeah.
You know, you've gone to the doctors. You've gone to the doctors and they've prescribed you pills, and those pills have had you up till 4 a.m. throwing up. And you've gone back to the doctor and says, I'm not really sure you prescribed me the right thing. You know, they've had me up till 4 a.m. throwing up. And the doctor said, you know, the problem is, Henry, you've not taken enough of them.
It's not a proper dose.
We're going to double your dosage.
Yeah, exactly. More, so, more.
Exactly. So you go home, you double the dosage, and you're up till 4 a.m. throwing up, but now you're bleeding from your nose and ears as well. And you're thinking, this really isn't going well. You know, I was throwing up at first, but now I'm bleeding from my nose and ears.
No, now it's, go back and see now it's really working. Now it's good stuff.
And go, we're nearly there now, but if we double your dosage again, you'll be all the way there. And you're thinking, if I take any more of these pills, I'm dead. I'm done for. And that's exactly the same as multiculturalism. Every time multiculturalism produces death, misery, suffering, which it has done all over the world, every time a multicultural society has been trialed, it has led to disaster.
And that's why that's what they want, and that's why they're doubling down, because they know it means the end of our civilization. They know it means the end of our countries, of nationalism, all of that stuff.
That's the end game. The ultimate end game by the people pulling the strings is white genocide. It's the end of us. Yeah. And when we're gone, and this is a message to all the people who are a little bit alt-light rather than alt-right or nationalists, once we're gone, our civilization's gone. Because our civilization is the fruit of our people. And think of it like an apple tree. Once you cut down the tree, you're not going to get any more apples. Well, once you get rid of Western man, once you get rid of European people, you get rid of Western culture, Western civilization, European culture, because that culture, that heritage and those traditions are the fruits of our people, the fruits of tens of thousands of years of evolution and development. And once we're gone, that goes with us. And believe me, people say, what will they write in the history books? There aren't going to be history books, because when the hordes sacked Alexandria, what was the first thing they burned?
They burnt it all. That's right.
The Great Library.
Yep, of course. Yeah. And it's the same as the ISIS troops are doing, of course, in Palmyra and these ancient settlements in Babylonia, if you will, or Iraq and Mesopotamia and these areas. They just go out there and destroy these statues. They blow up Buddhas. They blow up culture. They destroy it because this is a reset, you know. It's almost like this is a, it's obviously a disease. It's obviously that these religions is a kind of a mind control, and it causes these people to utterly want to eradicate everything that stands in its way, that doesn't prop up whatever their belief system is. And I mean, this is what people don't understand either. You're not working with a rational enemy that somehow is going to come to their senses at the end of this. As we said before we start, Mark, I mean, we talked about they believe that somehow, you know, they're going to go to heaven. They're going to be rewarded for this kind of stuff. And in many cases, yes, it is young, really gullible, stupid men that are indoctrinated into this. They go to Europe, make your jihad, become, you know, remembered, become a martyr and stuff like that. And sadly, due to the fact that they're so deracinated, they don't have anything else to aspire for within our societies. They are on the outside. They are, to a certain extent, marginalized because they don't fit in. And this is causing them to go into extremism, go into these very, you know, radical areas that basically, I think, that makes them feel like they're anchored to their identity and to their belief system again, right?
Yeah, in many ways, though, that's completely natural. All creatures seek to be around their own. They seek to be where they're most comfortable, except for white people. And this is the big problem we're facing. This is the existential crisis. Because whilst we have effectively an invading army who are cohesive, who follow their own culture, who want to embrace their own heritage, who want to embrace their own traditions, who hold on to a deep spirituality, embrace their religion, they look up to their elders, they focus on things like family and community. And you see this every Friday. They're queuing to get in their mosques. In many cases, you'll see them out praying in the streets because the mosques are so full. They can't get in there. It's literally beyond standing room only. Yet white people, we're facing this crisis because we're atomized. We don't have any spirituality. We've forgotten our culture. We've forgotten our heritage. And all we seek is materialism, individualism, and hedonism. So while we're running around trying to be individuals and we have no connection with our community, our culture, or our ways of life, we are weak. And an individual will always come off worse, or a group of individuals, a group of atomized individuals, will always come off worse when faced down with a cohesive and spiritually strong group of people. And that is why we are facing this crisis. You see, and that's the ultimate problem. It's one thing for a people such as we to lose their culture. To lose their culture, their heritage, and their traditions, that is tragic. But those things ultimately, they can be remembered. We can regain that. But when facing the problem of losing what we are and coupling that with the problem of an invading, cohesive, culturally and religiously strong group, that is a recipe for absolute disaster. That is a recipe for us to ultimately either be assimilated into that stronger group or simply be bred out. And that, my friend, is genocide. That is the fall of our people. And with that, sadly, the fall and loss of, and I'll make no apologies for saying this, the greatest civilization the world has ever known.
Yeah, I think that you're right. What I differ, though, on is I think that the reaction is going to be different. I think that this is also going to actually cause us to identify with our culture again. The things that we've forgotten, we're going to be reminded of it. We're going to seek that. We want to have those items back. We're going to get to a point where we start cooperating again. I think effectively it's going to, in a weird kind of way, cure us out of our disease and illness to a certain extent. But Mark, before we continue the conversation, and obviously in the second, I'm going to talk more about like the faked, you know, CNN piece here that I'm showing a little bit later too. There's some good stuff I want to discuss later in the second hour of what the hell this was about. This is typical how the media is using the situation, of course. But before we go there, tell us about The Fall of Western Man, your new book, and make sure that you plug this to people so they know your latest stuff and what you have out there, Mark.
Well, my book, The Fall of Western Man, firstly, it's available as a free download from my website, which you can see on the screen, fallofwesternman.com. As I say, you can download that for free. The book deals with the psychological assault on the Western mind. It deals with the fact that we as a people have lost our way. And it details in a rather in-depth manner how that has happened, the ways and means we have been attacked, and how that has affected our psyche, and how that has forced us or made us go from being such a cohesive and strong culture, and one that gave birth to such a wonderful number of things, art, poetry, literature, and this entire wonderful civilization that we see around us. And it has turned us from warriors and great inventors, industrialists, painters, writers, into essentially slob-like hedonists who unfortunately value materialism and instant hedonistic pleasure above any notion of culture, community, and spirituality, which is what we need at the moment. Because if we are ever to rise again, and if we are to defeat this existential threat, we need to rediscover our roots. We need to discover Western traditionalism, and we need to look to our ancestors. Because one of the greatest tricks that has been played on us is, whilst the Muslims are very good at passing down their traditions from one generation to the next, we have had a huge generation gap forced upon us, and our young people no longer look to their ancestors. In fact, in many ways, because of white guilt and self-flagellation, many young people actually actively despise their ancestors. They're ashamed to be white. They're guilty for being white. And that's the last thing we need right now. To make a comeback from all this, we need to rediscover our roots. We need to rediscover who we are, and we need to build a cohesive community that centers itself on things that really matter: family, folk, spirituality, blood and soil. And that is what can save the West.
Excellent. Very good. So check out thefallofwesternman.com. That's the website. Excellent. You can download a free copy there, of course. You can buy a copy as well if you want to support Mark's work, which I do recommend that you do. Also, of course, make sure you follow him on Twitter. It's Mark A. Collette. We'll have that linked up, of course, but that is where you can find Mark's work. That's really the best place to go. So thank you for the first segment here, Mark. Stay tuned. Well, guys, I just completed the second segment with Mark Collette. You should definitely join us for the second segment. Good stuff. We're talking more about the problems that Western men face. Also, of course, in particular, of how bad just the situation is in the UK. But we'll leave you on a high note and kind of a positive message. So not a downer show, really. Just a lot of good information about understanding the psychology, both behind our traitorous politicians and the globalists, and also a little bit, I guess, of ourselves and the other people on the street level, as it were, that are experiencing this travesty of forced multiculturalism, because that's really what it is. So if you do want to join us in the second segment, definitely head on over to redicemembers.com. That is our members' website. That's how we fund this project. That's how we make sure that we can not only continue doing what we're doing, but also grow and bring on more reporters, bring on more correspondents, bring on researchers, writers, all that good stuff that we need to continue to do this in the best way possible and produce more as well. We also want to expand our studio space. We want to get a bigger location for Red Ice. We need to grow. We need to send that message as well. So it's really with your help that we're going to be able to do that. Our memberships go from 3 months up to 2 years, and it's only €5 per month, which is nothing. It's nothing these days. I think if you're into a hipster, I make the comparison all the time, but it's a funny one. You can go to a hipster coffee joint and it basically costs you $5 for like a fancy cup of cappuccino. So basically for the price of a cappuccino per month, you can underline and support a growing media network and a website which has taken on a lot of responsibility of getting the word out about all the issues that we tackle and touch upon when it comes to European identity and the predicaments that we find ourselves in. We really want to step up to a new level of this as well. We have tons of ideas, we have so many ambitions, but we frankly just don't have the time because we're vastly undermanned here at Red Ice with what we do. Support us by getting a membership and sustain your membership. That will ensure us that we can bring on more editors and reporters and correspondents and writers and researchers and all that good stuff that we need. You know the score, but I need to continue to repeat it to you guys, also for the newcomers to the show, of course, but so you know and understand the severity of the situation, that if we don't get your support, all of this is over and we can't continue. That's just the reality of it, because we don't have ads, we don't have, blinking banners on the website, we don't monetize our videos, we don't have, big companies supporting us or products that we pitch on you and stuff like that. The only thing we pitch on you is the members section, and we need to do a better job, frankly, at pitching that to you guys as well. So if you do sign up, you get, of course, full access to everything that we've done back to our start in 2006. Tons of different topics. We also, of course, have a weekend TV show that we broadcast it live to our members. A lot of fun recording that show. So definitely check that out if you're new to it. And then, of course, we make it available in the archives if you can't catch it live. But yeah, good stuff. We also have other exclusive videos and material for you guys in the member section. So definitely head on over there and check it out. RedIceMembers.com. So thank you so much for your support. We'll continue right now with Mark Collette in the second segment. We have tons of shows coming up, and the weekend show is coming up on Saturday the 10th. So stay tuned. A lot of good stuff coming up. Thank you so much for listening or watching. We'll be right back after this short break.